At the legislature today, Senate Bill 373, calling for regulation and inspection of above-ground storage tanks, is before the full House of Delegates this week. We'll find out what changes the Finance Committee made to the bill the Judiciary Committee gave them. And a new president of West Virginia University was named just yesterday, and we'll visit with Dr. E. Gordon Gee on the legislature today. Good evening, I'm Beth Voorhees. Senators on the Health and Human Resources Committee amended a bill today that passed the House limiting abortions to 20 weeks after conception. The Senate Judiciary Chair, who also serves on the Health Committee, felt the amendment didn't do enough, however, to protect the state from future court actions. Ashton Mara explains.
The women's organization West Virginia Free gathered more than 50 supporters outside the Senate chambers to protest House Bill 4588, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act. The bill was taken up in the Senate Health and Human Resources Committee and amended, changing the felony charge for performing an abortion to a misdemeanor with a possible fine of up to $4,000. One of the lead sponsors of the House bill, Delegate Joe Ellington, is an obstetrician and says there is some confusion over the time limit in the bill.
20 weeks is considered from the last menstrual period is what we usually look at as far as the medical term abortion. This bill reports from post-fertilization, which is another 2 weeks, so that would be about 22 weeks from the last menstrual period. Now, generally accepted in the medical community is that from 24 weeks from the last menstrual period is considered viability. So there's only a 2 week difference from that.
When questioned by the chair if he had evidence that a fetus could feel pain at the 20-week mark, as supported by findings in the legislation, Ellington said he had not researched studies outside of what was contained in the bill. Dr. Luis Bracero, a high-risk OBGYN at the Women and Children's Hospital in Charleston, spoke against the bill.
I think that we need to let the decisions between patients and doctors not be essentially legislated by you guys. You know, you need to respect patient-doctor relationships. And you should not be criminalizing physicians who do terminations of pregnancy. We have to have a little bit more empathy. You don't know what the individual situation is. Everybody has their own story. It's not all one fit, you know, one size fits all. They're all different. They all have to be individualized. And that's what medicine is all about, individualization. And we have to respect that.
Senate Judiciary Chair Senator Corey Palumbo says in his research, nearly 40 states have laws that prohibit abortions after 24 weeks or when a fetus is considered medically viable. He says 9 or 10 states have a law similar to what West Virginia is considering now. And in at least 3 of those states, the law has been overturned by the courts.
Have you found any cases out there that have upheld a 20-week ban in a state?
I have not, but there are currently litigation pending in, I believe, Idaho and Georgia.
Okay.
But I might be incorrect on the states, but there is current litigation regarding the 20-week period.
Okay, but it's fair to say that all the court decisions that have been rendered at this point indicate that a 20-week ban is unconstitutional, but a ban at 24 weeks or after viability would be constitutional.
I think that's fair, yes.
The senator then proposed an amendment changing the bill from 20 weeks after fertilization to a ban on 24 weeks, bringing West Virginia in line with a majority of the country.
If not, before us is the amendment to the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no?
No.
Appears the noes have it. The noes do have it. The amendment to the amendment fails.
The amendment failed, and Palumbo says he was disappointed in the lack of support.
That's the form that has been consistently upheld by courts around the country. The version that we passed out of the committee has been rejected by courts in every published decision that I've seen. So I don't know why we would try to move forward with a bill that has been time after time determined to be unconstitutional and rejected.
The Judiciary Chair says he plans to talk with other senators about the amendment before the bill is introduced in his committee, but says he doesn't expect to receive much support. He adds he expects court challenges and ultimately a decision from the state Supreme Court should the 20-week ban be passed by the full legislature. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ashton Mara in the Senate.
A request last week by delegates for a special session focusing on Senate Bill 373 about water protection, if they could not finish by this Saturday's deadline, had some concern that the House would not be able to get through it. However, the bill passed through its final committee reference last night when it was approved by the House Finance Committee. As Aaron Payne reports, the committee made several changes to the bill.
The House Finance Committee removed several of the major amendments included in the Water Resource Protection Bill. Chairman of the committee, Brent Boggs, says the amendment relating to medical monitoring was a redundancy.
One of them was the medical monitoring, and actually the individual, Dr. Tierney from the Bureau of Public Health, was there, which indicated that her office intended to do a study on medical monitoring, whether or not it was in the bill. So I think that pretty much rendered that section of it not as important as maybe as it had been, but I think obviously that medical monitoring will continue.
The Finance Committee also removed the requirement for water treatment plants to install an early chemical detection system. Delegate Boggs questioned availability of the technology.
Obviously, we heard from many of the people that much of the technology to detect leaks is only in theory. It's not actually available right now, and we tried to look at things to where we could make sure we didn't put an undue burden on our public service districts that may not have the means that, say, a West Virginia American Water Company would have.
Boggs feels his committee did the best they could to make good legislation.
Certainly, we didn't spend as much time on the bill and have as much time as the Judiciary Committee did, but I think that there are things that did not hurt the overall intent of the bill. So obviously the bill is going to go to conference, and we'll see what happens when it gets to conference.
Senate Bill 373 will be up for full vote tomorrow. Another bill taken up by the Finance Committee today was Senate Bill 431, which would change the renewal cycle of driver's license in West Virginia from a 5-year to an 8-year cycle. The bill was passed unanimously by the Senate and approved by House Judiciary. The only point of contention was an amendment proposed which would eliminate a $10 fee to acquire a federally compliant license as opposed to the normal West Virginia license. Delegate Richard Iaquinta asked Acting Commissioner of the DMV, Stephen Dale, how the licenses were paid for prior to the proposed charge.
We were fortunate enough to get some additional grant money for several years in a row. However, that grant money has dried up, is no longer available, and we were using that grant money to backfill our budget to pay for the additional costs for those folks that chose to get the for federal use.
So all the grant money's gone.
Yes.
Delegate Doug Scaff asked if there was no grant money and the fee was done away with, where the money to administer the program would come from.
Our challenge was, of course, to figure out a way to pay for these additional costs. As counsel indicated, it would require an additional appropriation out of the state road fund to backfill our funds to pay for that.
Delegate Scaff then spoke in opposition of the amendment, saying the fee was a small price to pay to keep from raiding the struggling road fund.
All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye. All those opposed?
No.
Those appear to have, those do have, I declare the amendment rejected.
The bill without the amendment was approved to be reported to the floor with the recommendation that it do pass. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Aaron Payne in the House.
In a moment, we'll visit with the president of West Virginia University. First, here's a look at what's coming up in the Senate tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Among the bills up for passage, House Bill 4304, providing rules for motor vehicles passing bicycles on roadways. The driver of a vehicle shall pass to the left of the bicycle at a distance of not less than 3 feet at a careful and reduced speed and may not again drive to the right side of the roadway until safely clear of the bicycle. And House Bill 4618, establishing a transformative system of support for early literacy in the public schools. Among the bills on second reading, House Bill 4186, relating to concealed weapons licenses. A license may not be issued unless the sheriff has verified the buyer's information with National Instant Criminal Background Check System. House Bill 4236, establishing the Sexual Assault Nurse Examination Network. House Bill 4256, providing a salary increase to members of the state police. House Bill 4284, the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. House Bill 4393, creating the Dangerous Wild Animals Act. House Bill 4425, allowing the superintendent of the state police to hire legal staff. And House Bill 4496, regarding an allocation for matching funds for the West Virginia Research Trust Fund and including West Virginia State University to participate in the fund. The bow tie is back at West Virginia University. Even the Senate adopted Bow Tie Tuesdays because the accessory has become so popular. But before they could, they needed a lesson on the proper way to wear one. What better way to learn than from the man who wears bow ties well?
This is the easy part. We just put it around, okay? Just goes around. And like that. And then you can see that this top part is still a little bit longer, okay? Now let's go right to left again, Kyle. Okay, you're doing fine. You're doing fine. Just, you know, you got to tighten it up here. You got to tighten it up here. You're doing all right. Okay. In order to make a bow tie, you have to have bows. So here's the first bow. Everyone? Okay, just do it. Just do it like that, okay? Okay, number two. Right to left, right? Okay. So you got it. Okay. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to... Now, this is the tricky part. This is the part that Einstein couldn't quite figure out. So you put this, there's a little hole behind here, and you're going to have to try it a couple of times. But I'm talking to everyone, there's a little hole behind here, and then what you do is you put it through that little hole in the back, and then you have a bow tie. And what do you think?
Looks good.
Okay, now.
By now, you know that E. Gordon Key is the president of West Virginia University. His appointment was approved just yesterday by the Board of Governors. And as it happened today was WVU Day at the legislature. And Dr. E. Gordon Key joins us. Welcome. Good to see you again.
Oh, thank you, Beth. It's so great to be with you.
You want to be a TV news anchor? You've got it. You've got it down. You were never interim president, were you?
No, I was never. I was named as president for a term while they were going to find a new president. And then, obviously, over the last several months, I've been very energized by what I have seen, and the people of the state have been so warm, and the board and I agreed that staying a bit longer was a hopeful sign for both me and for the university. And I am gratified. I must say that, you know, you and I have talked about this before, but 36, the people of West Virginia gave me an opportunity to do something extraordinary in my life. And when asked to come back and be of some help, I was delighted to do so. But what I discovered when I came back is the fact that West Virginia and West Virginia University is like an infection, a positive one. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it gets in your bloodstream and it just doesn't leave. And so all of a sudden, all of these feelings of real gratitude came up. And so many friends and so many people that I know. And the university is such a rich place in terms of its people and its activities in the state, and an opportunity to be in a place that I felt could be of great value in terms of my life, but also maybe I could add some value to the lives of others, was the reason that I'm now here.
It seemed to go down pretty quickly since late last week.
Yeah, Chairman Daley, the chairman of our Board of Trustees, and the Board of Trustees, I think, thought about this pretty carefully. This was not, publicly, I think it appeared quickly.
Yes.
I think that privately they thought a lot about this, and I'm gratified to them. You know, I will say this, university presidents are always prone to say that they have wonderful boards. I do. This is a board that is consumed with doing the right thing for the people of West Virginia and for West Virginia University, and they're very, very dedicated to having the institution thrive, and that to a university president is a gift.
In a letter to your WVU family today, you say, "I've realized the great potential West Virginia University has to advance even further in its stature and worldwide impact. The intellectual vitality of this institution is engaging and empowering. It is time to move from the plateau of excellence to eminence. How do you do that?"
Well, first of all, what I said there, I really believe. This is not an institution that is lagging. This is an institution that has a vision for itself, wonderfully bright people in its faculty, its staff, its students, very dedicated. And now what we need to do is we need to muster all of our resources. You know, the power of West Virginia University is its size. It's also a detriment, but it's its size.
Well, is it too big or too small?
What it is it's very complex.
Oh, I see.
And so when you have a complex institution, what you can do is sometimes you can just deny that complexity and say that there's a law school and there's an engineering school and there's a college of arts and science and a medical school, et cetera. But our power is to not be just connected by a PRT, but be connected by all the intellectual activities that can go on. So in our medical center, we can connect with our philosophers. In our engineering school, we can connect with our humanists. I mean, that kind of vitality makes it a really rare place. And the other side of it is the fact that it is a land-grant institution. By that, I mean we were established to make a difference for every individual West Virginian, and we need to do that. We need to make certain that the people in this state believe in their hearts and minds that we're making a difference in their lives, and we must. And the opportunity for us is really quite unique right now.
But there are budget cuts.
Mm-hmm.
You were at the Capitol mm-hmm. today. Did you get to talk to legislative mm-hmm. leaders about the money?
I did. Well, you know, obviously, West Virginia is going through a tough time. We lag going into a recession, and we lag coming out. So that's the nature of a state built on energy. What we want to have is we want to celebrate that energy, but we want to create an environment in which jobs are at the center of what we are, that we keep our most talented people here. And I think our legislature, more than anyone, understands that. We're working with them. Obviously, we have taken some serious budgetary reductions, but also I believe that it's a time for the university to challenge itself, to be curious about how it can make itself better while moderating its budgetary needs. And in so doing, I think that we can set a very high standard, not only in the state, but within higher education. Everyone is facing the same problem. $17 trillion budget deficit in this nation, $1 trillion in budgetary overhang because of student debt.
Yes. And
then states have a very difficult time right now with Medicaid, Medicare, and all the other kinds of issues. So this is not a West Virginia problem. This is a national problem. But this is a West Virginia opportunity to solve something at a national scale.
The president of Marshall University told us on this program that he worried about the privatization of public higher education. Less public money coming in, more reliance on private dollars, tuition and fee increases. Do you share that concern,
well,
Dr. Cobb?
Well, obviously, I would prefer that our support was higher. I think any university president didn't say that is telling a fib at the very least. But saying that, I also believe that we belong to the people of the state. You know, several institutions, I won't mention Virginia or Michigan, but I will, have really attempted to privatize themselves, and I think that what they've done is they've lost the essence in some ways of who they are. We belong to the people of West Virginia. We're their university, and so therefore what we have to do is we have to figure out ways to make certain that we support ourselves and them through this process. But privatization is not a word that I'll ever use.
All right. You know, there was a time a few years back, you and I talked about this in January, when the credibility of WVU was called into question during a degree scandal. And you have said that the institution came out stronger and better because of that. Can you explain?
Sure. And I really do believe that. Otherwise, I would not be president of the institution. Because, you know, I believe very strongly. I believe in its integrity, and I believe in its ability to be able to do really remarkable things. What happens in Refiner's Fire is that institutions can do one of two things. That they can muddle through, they can disintegrate, they can become dysfunctional. In this instance, the Board of Trustees came together, the governor, others came together and they really reformed higher education in the state, in particular at the university. They appointed a board of trustees that were not politically appointed, but really appointed in terms of their ability to be able to make a difference and to bring scale and opportunity to the institution. We just celebrated the life of Chuck Vest, a native West Virginian, Morgantown, who went on to do great things, was the president of MIT, but he was on our board. So you think about that kind of cultural change. And so in a very short period of time, the university has moved into a much different sphere. This institution does not look through the rearview mirror. It is very much forward thinking, and that's one of the reasons I love being here. I like being in a place that is not muddling through, but is rather very confident about its future.
I think that answer just sums up who you are, is that you look at the very positive of it. Yeah, that was bad, but look, we came out stronger, we came out better, and that makes us feel better.
Well,
about
I believe that. Mm-hmm. I really do believe it. But yes. I also believe I also believe the role of leadership is to really look forward.
All right. You're wearing a button.
Yes.
That commemorates the 100th birthday of the WVU Extension Service. I'm not sure that everybody really knows what the WVU Extension Service is, so give us a brief lesson about it.
Well, perhaps one of the most important acts ever passed by Congress in this nation was the Land-Grant Act, which established these great land-grant universities. And their purpose was to make a difference in people's lives, was to create the American dream, and that was done at the height of the Civil War. Well, after they established those, then all of a sudden they realized that, how do they make this happen? How do they make this American dream happen? How do they take the university to the people? How do they get the people involved with the institution? So they passed the Smith-Lever Act 100 years ago, which established the extension services. County faculty, agents in every county, 55 counties in the state, who are working very closely with farms and fields and in the urban centers and making a difference in families and doing a variety of things. And we run the largest youth program in the state, 4-H, which is a fabulous program, is a university program. One of the things which happened to me when I came in 1980 is I realized that no one knew that extension was a university function. Mm-hmm. So we changed the name to West Virginia University Extension, and it's a wonderful group of people. I have learned a great deal from our extension folks.
Dr. E. Gordon Gee, the president of West Virginia University, so nice to see you, and thank you very much.
Honored to be here.
And here's a look at what's coming up in the House tomorrow. Among the bills up for passage, Senate Bill 209, allowing special needs students to participate in graduation ceremonies with their peers. Senate Bill 322, allowing the state to pay employees every 2 weeks. And Senate Bill 457, requiring educational programs for state inmates temporarily detained at regional jails. Among the bills on second reading, Senate Bill 307, authorizing community corrections programs to operate a pre-trial release program. Senate Bill 376, requiring on-site employees at certain public improvement sites to complete an Occupational Safety and Health Administration-approved 10-hour construction safety program. Senate Bill 397, clarifying the definition of financial exploitation of the elderly or certain other protected persons. Senate Bill 456, extending to June 30th, 2015, the expiration date for the health care provider tax on eligible acute care hospitals. Senate Bill 523, providing for an additional state veteran skilled nursing facility in Beckley. Senate Bill 579, to improve housing development and land use in West Virginia by providing an option to all municipalities, counties, or combinations to create a land trust program in order to eliminate blight and address vacant, delinquent, or foreclosed properties. And Senate Bill 602, requiring healthcare providers to wear ID badges. And this has been the Legislature Today. Tomorrow, we'll have a special report about natural gas drilling in the Marcellus Shale. House Bill 4411 would allow waste from this activity to be disposed of in a commercial landfills. The bill passed the House by a vote of 81 to 14. It's now being considered by the Senate Government Organization Committee. Reporter Glennis Board looks at the issue in a special report tomorrow. And we have exciting news about our coverage of the final day of the session this Saturday. We're taking it online. Reporters Ashton Mara and Aaron Payne will be at the Capitol tweeting the latest from the final bills being considered. Digital reporter Dave Mistich will be keeping a blog outlining all the action on our website, wvpublic.org. I'll be monitoring speeches and debates from the House and Senate floors and posting the best ones. Our website will be your go-to source to check in with all that's happening. It's final day coverage, The Next Generation, this Saturday, March 8th on wvpublic.org. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thanks for joining us. Good night.
Support for legislative coverage provided by the High Technology Foundation, headquartered at the I-79 Technology Park in Fairmont. Details at wbhtf.org. And by the West Virginia AFL-CIO, the voice for West Virginia workers, online at wvaflcio.org. In case you tuned in late, you can hear a replay of this online at wvpublic.org via podcast. And tonight it will also be replayed on West Virginia PBS at 11:30.